This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School podcast, episode number 74, The Ayurvedic Code to Eating. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to another beautiful week on this planet. I'm really glad to be with you guys this week as the seasons start to change. This morning I went out for a run and there's been a lot of forest fires near me, and so the sky was a little bit cloudy and there's a lot of haze hanging over the mountains, and I just thought about the cycle of life. I've been telling my kids about how important forest fires are, hopefully ones that are natural, not man-made, because they cause the destruction and then the ability to grow and to create something new, because there's so much growth potential that happens from that ash. And often as we're making changes, that's an important thing to understand, that we sometimes have to kind of burn to the ground what we've been up to allow something new to grow in its place. And in Ayurveda, there's a lot that we're asked of when we start an Ayurvedic life. A lot of habits that we have to shift, routines that we have to change, and it can feel really overwhelming at first. And you start reading and studying and it feels like this big rabbit hole that you've jumped into, and you're now in Wonderland and everything is new and different and you don't feel like you'll get your bearings. And I like to kind of keep things simple, and I like to live it simple because I don't think it's useful. Otherwise, it creates a lot more anxiety and stress, and then we usually crash and burn. We don't be able to sustain these new habits, and so then we give up. And that overall is not useful, right? The whole point of trying to make changes in our life is for them to last. That's why I'm not a huge fan of quick diet plans or quick fads. And there's so many people telling us how to eat and that we need to eat in different ways from how we're eating. And there's so many different diet plans. I have friends who are doing macro counting, and I have other friends that do online tracking apps where they're counting calories. And then I have my husband who just loves to eat so much meat. It's just incredible that one person can eat that much meat. And then we look at my family who's had a history of eating vegan and then eating vegetarian and then eating only raw foods. And they've just done so many extreme diets. And what I really like about Ayurveda is it's not a diet. It's really a different way to look at your connection to nature. When you say, I'm eating an Ayurvedic diet, I want you to start shifting that mentality to, I am eating the way that my body was designed to eat based upon its connection and its symbiotic relationship with nature. Eating Ayurvedically is really nothing more than coming back to eating real food the way that the earth intended. We've gotten so distanced from that. That's why I think it was maybe a little simpler to eat Ayurvedically in the past, because we ate more real foods. Even when I was a kid growing up in the 70s, 80s, all through those time frames, food was real. You didn't have to worry about the GMOs and the artificial ingredients and all the additives in that same way. And then, you know, Wonder Bread and Twinkies came out, and that didn't help things. But it was easier to buy real produce that was a tomato, was an actual tomato, as opposed to these genetically modified versions. It's important that we start to kind of reconnect to that. Doing a garden is a really good way because you get out in the dirt and you're feeling the soil and you're connecting that way. You actually get nutrients into your body by working in the soil without gloves on. And then you're able to plant these heirloom plants that haven't been modified and they're just real traditional. I always feel a connection to my grandparents. My grandfather was in the military. He actually was a pilot for the Air Force, and he flew bomber planes and had kind of a great distinguished career as a colonel in the Air Force. But when he retired, his family owned acres and acres of farmland, and they were fruit farmers. So they grew peach trees and apricots and plums and all kinds of fruit, cherry trees. And so it was a really big treat to go there and spend time with him, because we'd go out and work in the orchards together. He taught me how to prune trees, how to tell if things were ripe, how to watch for invading insects. He didn't like to use pesticides, and so we would use a lot of natural remedies to keep the bugs away. And then he would have a lot of workers that would come when it was harvest time to help pick the fruit. And he would pay us to pick the fruit. And that is laborious. If you've ever tried to pick a bushel of cherries, oh my goodness, it's so insane. It takes forever. But it's such a fun thing to ride the horses out into the pasture and to then go out into the orchards. And I'd lay back on the back of the horse and just eat fresh apricots right off the tree. I have a lot of memories eating fresh produce, things that came right from the earth. We ate a lot of them when they were in season, because that's when they were the most delicious and the best for our bodies. That's what eating Ayurvedically is eating food that's growing at the time that our body needs it. we're starting to move right now from summer into fall. So it is the perfect time to evaluate what's happening in nature around you. Depending where in the world you live, you might be going into a colder season or you might be going into a warmer season. Either way, we still evaluate and start to make shifts. Thinking that we should be eating the same diet all year round is probably what's caused a lot of our imbalances and problems because we're not adjusting to nature. We're living in these artificial environments inside our house with forced air and with heaters, and so we don't stay in tune with what our bodies actually need, and we're just eating the same foods all the time. It's important that we start to look for cues. So where I live, we are moving into the colder season, and so fall is starting. You wouldn't know it today because it's still like 100 degrees, but we're starting to see that shift, that crispness to the air in the morning. We're watching the edges of the leaves on the trees are starting to brown and get a little bit tired. You can tell it's kind of wilty. It's almost like the heat of the summer has caused everything to get dehydrated, and there's kind of this heaviness to nature. And you can see that those leaves are starting to withdraw inside and bring the nourishment into the root and the trunk of the tree to help them make it through wintertime. That's exactly what we should be doing as well, right? We want to start cooling ourselves down from all that heat and then start drawing inward, and then we're going to take some natural steps in order to protect ourselves from the wintertime. My husband is from Jackson, Wyoming, and Yellowstone National Park is up there, and there are lots of bears. I really enjoy them because we've gone to the park a few times and actually gotten to see some of these mama bears with their babies early in the spring. There is nothing like seeing a real live brown bear or a black bear. Grizzlies would be a little scary. We've mostly seen the browns and blacks. But when they come out and they've got their little babies with them. And I was thinking about how bears make it through the winter and hibernation. When I was a kid, they would always tell us, oh, bears sleep all winter. And I thought, how can a bear sleep all winter? Well, don't they have to go to the bathroom? And don't they need to eat something? And how do they make it through the winter? So I did a little bit of research, not extensive, but I did a little bit of research about that. Bears will actually eat as much as 20,000 calories a day in the time leading up to winter. So they're gaining about 30 pounds a week in order to be able to hibernate and not need to eat, drink, urinate, defecate, or go anywhere. They can go into their little den, kind of huddle down, and then they have all that nutrient and the fat on their body that they're able to kind of eat off those stores throughout the winter time. What happens is their bodies actually slow down. They have a slower heart rate and slower respiration in the wintertime. Now, we are not bears, and we aren't going to gain 30 pounds a week before the winter because that would be really detrimental to our health. However, we can learn a few things about how the bears are responding to this natural rhythm. No one is telling them that it's time to start eating all this extra food. There's not like a calendar that says, okay, bears, start to prepare for hibernation. They are paying attention to what's happening around them in nature, and they're naturally taking in more calories to protect themselves during the cold winter months. Vata season dominates winter. So when we get into this later fall and winter time, we're in Vata season. Things are a lot colder, they're a lot drier, there's more air movement, and it's important that we're protecting our bodies and our motions from all of this Vata energy. And the way we do that is through diet and lifestyle. So diet is so important because when we start to shift into more of a cold season diet, the foods that naturally are being harvested right now are matching the needs of our bodies. We need those cold foods or those foods that are going to balance the cold, and that's what's growing. Isn't that great? So in the fall, when we start to harvest all these root vegetables, think about the vegetables when they're in the ground. They're warmer, they're more connected to the earth, they're more grounding. So these things like beets, carrots, turnips, which I've actually discovered are quite delicious. I really like turnips lately. Potatoes, squashes, things like butternut, acorn squash, winter squash. So things that are growing and harvesting right now are perfect. Apples are something that are good too. They're still in season, at least where I'm at. And so as we consume more of these foods, it's preparing our bodies to make that shift from the lightness of summer and the hot of summer into the cool dryness of wintertime. We want to be more grounded. We want to be more connected. And guess what? It is totally okay if you gain a few pounds during the winter time if it's done because you're eating foods that are keeping your Vata energy grounded and connected more to the earth, and you're not letting that dryness take over. So adding moisture into your food, those are all things that are important. This is all just kind of a segue into the concept about following nature's rhythms and basically creating yourself an Ayurvedic code for eating. So I've created this code based upon a lot of different information that I've read and studied and tried for Ayurvedic eating. And I've tried to make it really simple because I don't think that Ayurvedic eating should be a fad. It doesn't mean that you have to eat only Indian food or use Indian spices or put turmeric on everything. Now, if you like turmeric, it's amazing. I should do a whole podcast on turmeric because the benefits of turmeric are like, what? Fantastic. When we start to eat Ayurvedically, we don't have to eat in a particular cultural style. It's more the code or how we're eating our food. Okay, so this is my Ayurvedic code for eating. And I think it will help you to take something that can be very confusing if you choose it to be, and it will make it much simpler for you. And that's what the Ayurveda Life School is all about. That's why I started this, was to help it be simple. So I've got five basic codes. And just like the pirates in the Pirates of the Caribbean, they're kind of more like guidelines. So you could adjust these. You could adopt some of these. It's helpful if you create your own codes for eating because they're not rules. It's just basically a blueprint for you. It's something that lets you see, hey, this is the goal I'm wanting. This is how I want to feel. And this is the pathway that will take me there. And I'm going to try to adhere to that, knowing I'm going to have detours and I'm going to take little journeys and little side ventures, but I want to come back to these things. So this is kind of an invitation for you to start developing your own Ayurvedic code for eating. And as we move into a new season, it's an awesome time to do that because it's a natural time to start shifting what you're eating. And then you can start focusing on how you're doing it. All right. So here's my first code, my first Ayurvedic code for eating. Have a curious mind and make it fun. If it isn't fun, then why are you doing it? We do so many things in life because we think that we should or because it's good for us. Really, the joy, if it's not there, your body's not going to accept what you're doing and it's not going to last and you're not going to stick with it. So you need to make this fun. This could look a lot of different ways. It could look like getting a bunch of fun cookbooks that you're going to experiment with. It could look like Sunday nights you sit down with whoever you live with, a family member, and you both get on the computer and you Google some fun new recipes to try that week. It could be that you're just going to be open to seeing what food's all about for you, being a little bit more curious, a little more open to trying new things. You're going to maybe be open to it being fun. If you've always thought that changing your food is hard and that it has to be painful and that it needs to involve suffering, maybe you just need to work on some thoughts around that, that perhaps this could be fun. Okay. And if you don't believe that quite yet, maybe just try on the idea that I'm open to the possibility that this could be fun. So maybe you're not quite yet to thinking it's fun, but you want to kind of take this on the same way a kid learns a new sport. I will sign them up sometimes for things that they've never even asked to do. They're like, what? You put me in soccer? I'm doing hockey. I'm trying lacrosse. And it's because I want them to have a myriad of experiences. And I always tell them, you don't have to love it, but you need to have fun when you're doing it or there's no point in us going. And I don't believe that all sports should be uber competitive and that the reason that we play them is to win. I think it's to grow and learn something. So can you look at trying on an Ayurvedic eating pattern as something that provides growth and learning and is fun? It's a new experience for you to try. Opportunity to meet new people as you connect to forums online and you learn new things and you adopt new habits. It's kind of a fun experiment. When you look at something like as an experiment, then you're very curious and open to what could happen. I just don't even know. Something cool could happen from this, or maybe nothing will happen from this, or maybe I'll decide I hate this. But being open to anything that comes up is really important and being willing to get it wrong. It is okay if you try some things and a recipe doesn't work, or you eat something and you don't feel great afterwards, or you're trying to explore and make it fun and you're like, this is just lousy. I'm sorry, I don't want to eat any more lentils because I'm just over lentils today. That's totally okay. You're okay to get it wrong sometimes. Okay, so that's our first code. Have a curious mind and make it fun. Second code, go for the 80-20 prana. Prana is life. We hear about prana when people talk about breath. Pranayama is like breath practice, but it's the life energy in everything around us. I like to think of it as vibration. So everything has a vibrational level, and our bodies have vibration, food has vibration, things in nature have vibration. So as things vibrate, they affect the other things that they come in contact with. So when you eat food, the vibrational level of that food or the lack of vibrations are going to impact your body and either bring you to a higher vibrational state, which ultimately means a higher state of consciousness, living from a higher place. Or as I had one teacher say, you can't have higher level thinking on Lucky Charm consciousness. If you're eating Lucky Charms, your level of thinking is not going to be elevated the same way as it would be if you ate something that was real food. So I like to go for the 80-20 prana. 80% of the time, choose prana-rich foods. High prana foods typically get a lot of sunlight when they're growing. So they're natural foods. They've absorbed the pranic energy from the sun. They're foods that are in season. Things like we mentioned before about the fall foods, you would choose foods that are growing right now. There are so many lists that you can find online that will show you for your local area what are seasonal foods that grow in that time of year. And we know if foods don't grow where you're living in that time of year, you just want to choose foods that are matching the qualities to that time of year. I've done whole episodes about qualities and about the seasons. So you just want to choose foods that will balance the qualities of your current season. Okay, so foods that are in season, foods that are organic. If you can go organic, that's great. We were lucky 20, 30 years ago because everything was pretty much considered organic. Now you have to search it out. It's not that much more expensive. And as you start eating Ayurvedically, the food's so much more nourishing. You won't need to eat as much. So you'll find that you actually have a lower or at least the same grocery bill. It's not going to make it more expensive. Go for unprocessed. For me, that helps me to go, okay, I'm not going to go frozen and I'm going to avoid going canned. I used to only eat canned beans. And then I got an Instant Pot and my whole life changed. If you do not have an Instant Pot, you need one in your life. It will revolutionize your cooking because now I realize, oh, I can actually cook beans from a hard bean that's uncooked and have it on the table within an hour or so. And it's delicious. So much better for you. So much more prana-rich than having something that's been canned. And then finding things that grow local to your home. So you can remember this real easily as a soul diet: seasonal, organic, unprocessed, and local. When I would go up to my grandfather's farm and I would stroll through the orchards with him and we'd pick cherries and eat them straight from the tree, or I'd pull blackberries off of his bushes, I was eating very prana-rich food because it was my local area. It was unprocessed food. It was definitely organic the way that he'd raised his farm. And it was in season because it was literally being taken off the tree and eaten. The longer food goes from the time it's picked to the time that it's eaten, or the time that it's harvested to the time that it's eaten, it loses prana. I remember one time my mom had this cucumber that I don't even know how long it had sat in her fridge, and she was eating this cucumber and it just looked not well, and it was kind of flopsy and it didn't hold that same crispness that a cucumber usually has. And I asked her, why are you eating that cucumber? She's like, well, it's gotten a little tired, but it still has all of the nutrients in it. And at the time, I didn't argue that, but I've learned so much more now that it probably wasn't as nutritious for her body as it would have been if it was actually ripe, ready produce. So don't buy 2 weeks of produce at a time. When you go to the market, just buy enough for a few days so that you can have it as healthy and as naturally close to the source as possible. A lot of grocery stores will even have a section that says locally grown, so you know that those came from your direct area. I'm really lucky. I've got this farmer that's near me that has an organic farm, and I go walking by it in the mornings. I'm always checking to see what's growing next, and he'll let you come and pick and order food and buy things just fresh from his farm. And it's literally like half a mile from my house. So if you have something like that, just kind of be on the lookout. You might be able to find options that you're not aware of yet. So the reason I call it the 80-20 is because I try 80% of the time to eat real unprocessed foods, like prana-rich foods that are a soul diet. And then if the other 20% of the time I'm a little more relaxed with it, and occasionally my daughter loves chocolate chip cookies, she makes one and I eat one, I'm not going to sit and beat myself up about it. So this is a code that I live by because I want it to be sustainable. If you feel like you have to do this perfectly, you'll probably give up. Foods that don't have a lot of prana are going to be things like caffeine, sugar, processed fats, frozen or canned, artificial ingredients. So anything that has been altered by man and is no longer the way that it was designed to be eaten. Eating foods that are low in prana will impact your body, mind, and your soul. And I notice that if I make a choice, and I try to make it a deliberate choice, to eat something that is not prana rich, I pay the consequences later. And I also pay the consequences when I eat prana-rich food. So I know there's going to be an effect based upon what I'm eating. And as I become more evolved in my consciousness and my way of being, I make better and better choices, but I don't ever be judgmental to myself about it. That's not useful and not helpful. All right, my third code: have a food sadhana. No matter what you eat, eat it deliberately and mindfully. So sadhana is when we take an ordinary practice, we make it sacred. So creating a food sadhana or rituals or sacred practices around how you actually consume your food. If you're going to eat a piece of cake, don't stand in the corner of the kitchen with a fork so that you hope no one notices and you don't even notice that you ate the cake and inhale it. Sit down at the table, take your time, put it on a beautiful dish, eat it slowly, enjoy every bite, feel joyful about doing it, and avoid those feelings of guilt or that you shouldn't have eaten something. All that does is decrease your vibration and makes it even harder for your body to process the food. So no matter what you're going to eat, eat it deliberately and mindfully. It's better to eat an In-N-Out burger mindfully than a kale salad with unhappiness and misery. And my son is one that I work on that a lot, is him eating mindfully, eating and slowing down. I tell him it's okay for you to eat these burger and fries, but I need you to slow down while you're eating it. Put it down between bites. Tell me what you're tasting and experiencing. That's really hard for him. He's a 15-year-old boy. They just can eat so much and so fast. Now, how you're feeling while you're eating the food is going to have a big impact on how it will digest. So part of your food sadhana might be, I won't eat when I'm upset, right? So you're going to create your own codes around this. When you sit down to eat, that's an important thing as well. It's diverting all the energy and focus to your digestion instead of to your body standing upright and moving around. Avoiding distractions. Just enjoy your meal. I'm not even asking for you to change what you're eating necessarily. Just enjoy what you are eating. Take it slow. Eat mindfully. Put your fork down in between bites. My parents used to have that rule when I was growing up and I hated it, but they did that so we could eat slower, have conversations, and actually have a meal together. Saying a prayer or expressing grace and gratitude before eating. My grandmother grew up in a very poor family, dirt floors, low amounts of food. They were always a little undernourished. And then when she married my grandfather, he came from a wealthier family and they built a big, beautiful home and they were able to live in a much more lavish lifestyle than previously. She loved to cook. She loved to feed people and she always displayed the food beautifully. And I've tried to recreate that pattern from her. When I was first married, we did not eat that way. And I was kind of on the go and we were in school and students and things. And then when you have small kids, that can be challenging as well. But as I've had my kids grow up a little bit and I put more attention to it, I've actually pulled out grandma's china and tried to create a little more sacredness around food. There are still days where I'm standing at the bar eating and I realize, oh my goodness, I just ate my whole entire breakfast standing here thinking about something completely different. But I do notice that those are the days where I tend to get hungrier again mid-morning because it was almost like I never tasted the food. I didn't experience it and I missed that part of the sense experience. And so now I'm hungry again. Whereas if I had sat down and eaten it slowly and paid attention to what I was eating, I tend to be fine until lunch. It's kind of interesting. That's where we talk about being curious and exploring. Okay, so creating food sadhanas about how you eat. Then the fourth one is timing matters. Eating your biggest meal midday is important. Your digestive fire, your Agni, is the highest then. And so it's kind of if you can start reframing your day and instead of dinner being the focal meal, dinner is a time to reconnect and get back together with the family or whoever you live with. But lunch is the biggest meal for eating. So you want to have the most food at lunchtime. That does not mean you eat a gargantuanly huge lunch. It just means that comparative to your breakfast and your dinner, it is the largest of the three meals. And then avoiding eating late at night. You got to give your body time to cleanse and purify. When you get past 10 p.m., you're moving into pitta time and you need the body's pitta fire energy to work on digestion, not on trying to process what you just brought in. We want it to cleanse and clear out the liver and clean the blood. So important. So many of us have liver toxicity because we're never giving our bodies a chance to actually clean out. By adjusting that, eating your biggest meal at midday and then having a smaller, lighter dinner and not eating after about 7 p.m., close your kitchen. My mom used to always say, the kitchen is closed. She'd turn the lights off and try to encourage us all to stay out of there after dinner. So you got to plan that ahead. You got to make a mental thought of, well, what am I going to do instead when I feel snacky? Something I really like to do is just have tea. So I do herbal teas in the evening. Licorice root is my most favorite right now. It's got so many good beneficial properties. And really avoiding snacking. And that is probably the hardest thing for people because we've been conditioned to eat every couple hours. So just give yourself some patience and compassion there. No, it's going to take you a little while. Okay, so that was the fourth code. Timing matters. That could look different for you. You might decide to focus on one aspect first. You might say, well, I'm just going to focus on the dinner time part. That'd be perfect. Or I'm just going to pull out one snack during the day and just see how it affects you, okay? That goes back to code number one about being curious and making it fun. You're just an experiment. You are your own little petri dish and you're experimenting to see what's going to happen when I do this. Okay, the last code is drink up. Your body needs water. It needs a lot of fluid, more than most of us give ourselves. And we are moving into a season, into the fall, where it's really important that we're well hydrated. We need to hydrate the rasa. The rasa is the part of the body that's all the fluids. It's like the plasma, the water that moves through the body, the lymph, any of the mucous membranes. We need that rasa, that moisture, to keep us well through the wintertime. It's going to be a lot drier outside, and it's going to counteract a lot of the moisture in our own bodies. So the more we can take in is going to be really important. I wanted to just touch on something really quick. There's something in Ayurveda called Triadashi Vega. Triodashi, which I'm sure I'm saying completely wrong, but Triodashi Vega are the 13 natural urges. Our body has natural urges, and it's important that we listen to them and that we respond when our body needs them to happen. One of those 13 natural urges is thirst. So if you are thirsty and you are not taking a drink, then you're not listening to your body's natural urges, and you're pulling moisture out of the body, and you're depleting that rasa. That rasa tissue is the first layer of tissue that is formed in our body after we eat. And if we're not taking care of that, it affects all the deeper layers of the body, all the way down to the reproductive tissue. So it's very important that we listen to that urge and need to have a drink. We don't need to drink excessive amounts. There's kind of a Western idea that we should drink half of our body weight in ounces. That's okay Ayurvedically. We think that's fine. It's just the timing and how we do that drinking. So just avoid having that too much during your meals because it affects your ability to digest. Something else that's really neat to try is called Ushnadaka. Ushnadaka. And it's where we boil the water and then allow it to cool. So it's a temperature that you can drink. It's still warm, but it's not going to burn you. And then you're going to sip on that about every 10 to 15 minutes throughout the day. So the way that I do that, I have a tea kettle, and that's another thing. The tea kettle and my Instant Pot saved my life. Both of them are great. So I have an electric tea kettle that I just have plugged in. I can turn it on and it heats my water in like a minute. It's so fast. But I'll boil a big container of that, about 8 cups, and then I'll pour it into my thermos and let it cool for a little bit just so that it's not going to burn my mouth, and then I'll put the lid on it and just sip on that throughout the day. And it's not the quantity that you're sipping that's important, it's how often you're sipping. Every 10 to 15 minutes is allowing your body to really take that in and use that to hydrate at a deeper level. That continual drinking of that hot water allows you to stimulate your hunger, which is important. If you don't have an appetite, that's not good. We want to have a strong, regular appetite at good, consistent intervals throughout the day. It helps your body to digest. It's very good for your throat. So as we move into the fall, it's probably good because everything's dry, right? And you're going to need more of that water. It's easy for your body to digest it. It helps to cleanse the urinary system. So if you suffer from UTIs, this is a really good practice to get into. It relieves hiccups. So some people get a lot of hiccups. It helps with that. It's going to relieve gas. It'll relieve any aggravation of Vata and Kapha in their home sites. If you recall, Vata's home site is in the colon, so the large intestine and colon. Kapha's home site is actually in the stomach, so it's going to help that whole digestive tract to move smoothly, which is overall going to relieve a lot of constipation. So if you suffer from constipation, it's something that we also recommend during cleanses. So when we're doing a cleanse, which we actually are going to be doing a fall cleanse as part of our scholars program in October. Yay, I'm so excited. It's going to be so good. I love group cleanses. It's ideal to use when you're trying to cleanse. Helps to just flush the body out and hydrate the tissues at a deeper level. If you're having a fever, cough, if you have a lot of ama, if you have a runny nose, if you're having any pain in the body, drinking this water in this way, the Ushnadaka, is going to help your body to really alleviate a lot of those symptoms. So I drink every day warm lemon water upon waking, and then I sip from the thermos all day, and then I enjoy tea. So I'll do an herbal tea, usually mid-morning, in the afternoon, and in the evening. Right here next to my computer as I'm recording, I have my echinacea tea with peppermint because I'm working on strengthening my immune system, so I've been drinking echinacea tea lately. But those are all things that help with hydration, and they also help to avoid snacking because it gives your body those nutrients to try and work on. Let's do a little summary. Okay, we have our 5 Ayurvedic codes for eating. First one is have a curious mind and make it fun. Second one is 80-20 prana. Third one is food sadhana, or practices around how you eat your food. The fourth one is timing matters. And the fifth one is drink up. So as you start to focus on these things, making it fun and creating rituals around your food, timing it in a way that makes your body feel good so that you're letting your food digest before you eat more, and then getting lots of hydration in there, you are going to feel so good as you come into fall. And it's going to prevent a lot of those illnesses that we see in the springtime because they are caused by an accumulation of vata energy through the winter. This is the most important season as far as keeping you healthy throughout the year. So we want to really focus on batten down the hatches, getting our practices in line, setting some good rituals and patterns so that as we move into the springtime, we're not going to suffer from any of those disorders. I came across this fantastic quote I wanted to share with you. It's by Dr. Thema Brian Davis. And it says, pay attention to your patterns. The way you learn to survive may not be the ways you want to continue to live. Heal and shift. We're setting new patterns. As we move into fall, it's a great time to set some new patterns around our food. I encourage you to really take some time. What is your Ayurvedic code for eating? And then try and set some guidelines up for yourself to help you to move into a healthier way of being. We can really help you if you want to join us in that 28-day Ayurveda immersion. We focus for a large portion of the time on what we eat. We do a lot of patterns together. We set some new habits, some new rituals, and it really helps to have a clear-cut every day you study a different aspect of how you're living and your routines and your rituals so that by the end of that month, you set some good patterns. It's a really good systematic way to study it. And if you've done the immersion program, I wanted to invite you to join Scholars. Scholars begins in October. We are actually kicking it off with a month about nutrition and a group cleanse. It's going to be fantastic. We've been working on the curriculum and getting everything complete, and it's a beautiful program. I'm really, really excited to be able to offer it to you. To participate in that, we do invite you to do the immersion first so that you have a good foundational understanding, and then you can move into the Scholars program if you would like. You can get information about both of those at ayurvedalifeschool.com/ayurveda immersion if you're interested in the immersion program, or ayurvedalifeschool.com/ayurveda scholars if you're ready to take that next step into the monthly scholars program. Have a beautiful day today. Enjoy playing and having fun as you change your habits. Namaste.
Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it.
You can connect with me online at ayurvedalifeschool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.